And one big piece of foreign news that has been overshadowed by the recent headlines out of Gaza and Ukraine is what's happening in Iran. It just agreed, along with the U.S., to extend negotiations over its nuclear program for 4 more months. That's after missing the July 20th deadline for a comprehensive agreement, one that would prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons, something the West fears that it wants to do. Of course, Iran has always maintained that its program is for energy and science, not weapons. Joining us now is Karim Sajjadpour, a senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He's with us from Washington. Karim Sajjadpour, welcome.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Well, there was an intense 16-day negotiation in Vienna to meet this deadline for an agreement. So why was there no deal, do you think?
Well, I think, Jeremy, when the interim deal was reached in November, there was a fundamental mismatch in expectations about what a comprehensive deal would entail. For the United States in particular, they believed that this was merely the first step. And in order to reach a comprehensive deal, Iran would need to curtail its nuclear program much further. Whereas Iran believed that the interim deal was merely a first step, and in subsequent steps, Iran would be able to retain what it now has of its nuclear program, and the United States would need to push back its sanctions regime much further. So there was this mismatch in expectations, but I think that both sides, and obviously we're talking not just about the United States and Iran, we're talking about the P5 plus one, which entails, in addition to the United States, the United Kingdom, France, Germany, Russia, and China. But really the primary mistrust is between Washington and Tehran. But I think both parties recognize that a continuation of the negotiations is better than any alternative option.
Why, for the United States, is that the case? Why is it better for a continuation of the negotiations if they're not getting what they want in terms of a curtailing of the nuclear program?
Well, I think from the standpoint of President Obama, he has two fundamental objectives vis-a-vis Iran. He wants to avert a nuclear armed Iran, and he wants to avert having to take military action against Iran. And a continuation of negotiations checks both those boxes for President Obama. And also, look at the world from President Obama's eyes. Everywhere he looks, there are crises, whether that's in Israel-Palestine now with the Gaza war, with Russia, in Syria and Iraq. Almost the entire Middle East is in flames. The last thing he wants is to create another conflict with Iran. And frankly, Iran provides President Obama one of the very few opportunities to try to leave a positive diplomatic legacy. And likewise, on the Iranian end, you have a new president in Iran, Hassan Rouhani, who has banked his entire presidency on reaching this nuclear deal. And from the standpoint of the Iranian people, they overwhelmingly want to see an arrangement whereby they emerge from economic and political isolation and the country's economic lot is improved.
So where exactly are they far apart on a deal? Why couldn't they reach an agreement?
At the moment, the biggest hurdle is the number of centrifuges which Iran should be allowed to spin. In the eyes of the United States, that number should be very low. We're talking about maybe a couple thousand, whereas Iran wants to retain what it has now, which is 10,000 centrifuges. But it also wants to expand to an industrial scale nuclear program within the next decade. Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, said that Iran's practical needs are well over 100,000 centrifuges. He said that very recently. And that's at least 10 times more than the U.S. government would be willing to countenance. So there are some other disputes as well, but that's been the fundamental hurdle up until now.
And what about sanctions? How are those sanctions going in Iran now? And have they, if they were to be ratcheted up, how much of an effect would that have in Iran? Because, of course, that was the promise that President Obama initially made, was that if they couldn't reach a deal, that there would be more sanctions.
That's a good question, Jeremy. Essentially, the administration likes to say that the broad sanctions architecture against Iran remains. And that was the case during the duration of the interim deal, meaning that Iran, what Iran received as a financial incentive wasn't really sanctions relief. It was that it was given some of its frozen assets abroad. And these are this is also the term of the extension, that Iran would be given a little less than $3 billion of its own frozen assets in foreign bank accounts as a financial incentive. But the sanctions are, you know, many believe that it was the onerous sanctions against Iran's central bank and the sanctions which slashed Iran's ability to produce and export oil, which brought it to the negotiating table. And I think there is some truth to that. But now, I imagine Iran kind of this like this elephant with a 10,000-pound load, and passing additional sanctions would only add a few hundred more pounds to that load. And so I think additional sanctions, in the event that we're not able to reach a comprehensive deal, won't be enough to force Iran to compromise, but I think it could be enough to escalate into a pretty dangerous position.
How popular is President Rouhani in Iran now, given the fact that they were not able to reach a deal? This is a person who came to power as a reformer and as probably you would say a more liberal Iranian than certainly the other alternatives.
Well, that's right. President Rouhani, he's been in office now 1 year. And as I mentioned, he's put all of his political capital into reaching this nuclear deal. He hasn't really made much of an effort to push for greater political freedoms, greater social freedoms. I think there's an implicit understanding with the Iranian public that his first, second, and third priority is reaching this nuclear deal. And if the nuclear deal is reached, that will bring a bounty of other things, which is, you know, improved economic situation, foreign investment, et cetera. And he hasn't succeeded in delivering that. But on the other hand, he is an improvement over his predecessor, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who, you know, as we remembered over an 8-year period during his time, the political social freedoms of Iranians were significantly curtailed, and the country was severely economically mismanaged. So I think Rouhani in his first year in office has been a slight improvement vis-a-vis Ahmadinejad. But on the other hand, he really hasn't fulfilled the huge expectations people have and had of him.
Finally, Karim, I just want to ask you, we only have about a minute left, but how does what's happening in Gaza look to from Iran's perspective?
It's a good question, Jeremy. Iran's reputation had taken a huge hit in the Middle East over the last few years, given its support for the Assad regime in Syria, which is massacring Sunni Arabs. And as we know, Iran is a Shiite Persian country in a predominantly Sunni Arab world. So Iran had lost tremendous soft power given its support for Assad and also given its support for the Maliki government in Iraq. But Iran is in its element when there's fighting between Israelis and Palestinians, and in particular when there's mass popular outrage in the region vis-a-vis Israel. So I think at the moment, Iran stands to gain at least from continued fighting in the Gaza war.
Karim Sajjadpour is a senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Karim, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Anytime. Thank you, Jeremy.